Fred Film Radio from Cannes Film Festival, France.
Hello and good morning. We are recording from the Crozette, from Cannes Film Festival 79. And I'm here with Nada Guillon from Syria.
Hello.
And Peter Brasso, our splendid Peter Brasso from the UK.
Hello, thank you for inviting me.
And this is like the third days of the festival. Is the third days?
It is day three.
Yeah, day three. So we start with the opening movie by Pier Salvatori, The Electric Kiss. It's a light-hearted romantic comedy about an unexpected encounter that sparks chaos and connection between two strangers.
Yes.
Have you seen the...
Yes, I have seen it. It's a nice film for opening, because at the opening you just wait at the ceremony and it's long, so you have to have a light film after that.
I like love, romantic comedies, love stories, and I was surprised by the end of this movie.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. It's a classic opening film. It's a light bit of fare. I've compared it to, it's like arriving at a restaurant and being immediately shown to the sweet trolley. Immediately you have to have something sweet instead of anything else. A little bit of souffle or something, which doesn't completely rise. It's a kind of high concept comedy. It reminds me of a kind of pretty moderate mid-period Woody Allen, or maybe Noel Coward's stage play Blithe Spirit, a little bit. But you're right, there's something a little bit, it seems to be working against its own spirit of comedy with long flashbacks about this other woman, the muse Irene, who turns out to be terribly serious, and not just a flippity-jibbit at all. So it's one of those films that the minute it's over, it kind of halves in value in your mind with every second that goes past. Some films grow in your mind and you find yourself thinking about them after they're over. This film completely vanishes like a soap bubble, and you think, what is it I just watched? This complete gibberish nonsense? So I didn't quite like it, still less love it, in the way that I perhaps might have been expected to do.
And then the first movie competition that we saw, A Woman's Life, by Charlene Bourgeois.
It's
a raw, intimate entry about a woman holding it all together as it starts to unreveal. The actress is amazing. She's Lea Drucker.
Yes, I like this actress. She's very good, but I don't really like the film. Even though I don't like to speak about films just after seeing them, or even the next day, I have always to think about a film, let it in my mind, to really have which image comes to me, which idea, if it grows on me or no. So this is, but first impression, I did not really like it.
It's full of classic music, and yes, this workaholic woman that doesn't want to have children, and doesn't cook, and wow, it's a Robocop.
Well, that's an interesting idea. Yeah, I think without Lea Drucker, it would have been nothing at all. Yes. Without nothing at all, Lea Drucker, I think, single-handedly raises it into something interesting, but only just. I think without her, it would have been a completely absurd piece of, frankly, nonsense. It looks real, but in fact, everything about it is completely ridiculous. She's this supposedly brilliant surgeon, and incidentally, there is no other kind of surgeon in the movies. She's a brilliant surgeon who has this passionate affair with a literary journalist who's a novelist, and she takes her to this austere mountaintop hut inhabited by a real novelist. I can't remember his name now. And they have an affair, and it's all absolutely ridiculous. It's completely absurd. But it is given a kind of patina, authenticity, by Lea Drucker, because she's such a good actor. She sells it, and sells it hard. So I was pretty much on board with it.
But it's incredible because this is the second movie, French movie, that we've seen. I mean, I hope we will be surprised and in the next few titles, because we have so many. Mm. And do we smell some crisis in the French cinema?
Well, sorry, no, you go ahead.
No, please continue.
Okay, well, it's difficult to tell. It's always tempting to divine some great tendency on the basis of one or two slightly arbitrary discovered films. I think perhaps French cinema, I'm looking for the next big thing in French cinema, to be honest with you. I've just watched Parallel Tales by Asghar Farhadi, which is a French film, effectively. I mean, it has Isabelle Huppert and Catherine Deneuve in it, so it can't get more French than that. And it's a pretty decent high concept drama of the sort that, well, Georges Simenon is actually referenced in the film. But it's pretty middleweight. It's a bit middleweight. I mean, the French might say this is pretty rich from you Brits, because you Brits are the kings of middleweight drama. But it is a bit middleweight, and I agree. I'm looking for a big, big breakthrough in French cinema, something on the lines of Amour by Michael Haneke or something like that, colossal kind of thing that to set everyone's hair on fire.
Yeah, so Parallel Tales is two stories that start apart, then collide, and big consequences, small choices, big consequences, no easy answer, tight, tense, I don't know. I leave you arguing about the ending.
I have not seen this film not yet. Just after 1 hour, I will see it. And I'm very curious because I'm writing a lot about Iranian cinema. And for me, Asghar Farhadi is really an Iranian director. And I was disappointed with his films, French films, the Le Passé, and the other one everybody knows, in Spanish film. So I'm very curious to see this film today. I don't know if we can consider it, as my colleague said, it's a French films. Mm. And for the French cinema, I'm also waiting for this big, great film, French, because all French films now similar for me, and not a big surprise, a good surprise for me.
And then we have my favorite so far is we have a Japanese, Koji Furukada, Magic Notes, that has been in competition here, and anyway, it's a director that I really love it.
Yes, I agree. I have seen a couple of Koji Furukada's films before. I've liked them very much. I perhaps don't like this one quite as much as the other one, Love Life, which I thought was so good. But this, I think, is a very intriguing, interesting film. It's a very quiet or quietist Japanese film, a kind of walking pace film, which doesn't force its effects on you. It just presents it in a very cool, calm daylight. It shows you what's happening. A lot of mid-range shots or mid to long shots stuff. No really big close-up moments of drama, but something which allows you to divine what is happening over a long period of time. It pays its audience the compliment of treating them like intelligent people, intelligent human beings, that they don't have to be told immediately what's happening and what's going on and how they should think and how they should feel about every second of the movie. And it dawns on you what is happening to the two women at its heart, and I think it's a really nice, a really interesting film.
He's an interesting director for me, because as you said, he has this incredible style to tell something in a very, very quiet manner.
It made me think
about what Japan is, what the political situation in Japan at the moment, because it's a country that signed a treaty after the Second World War, where they didn't have proliferation of arms to attack another country, but is to protect their own country. only to protect, and they are changing the law in Parliament. But what is incredible is also the other law that they want to change about the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
Mm.
And I felt that there is a lot of this in the movie. It's a very subtle. I mean, we have a radio program that where we hear some news about the Ukrainian war. It's far.
Mm.
And then we have some. It's like they are next to. We hear some bombs. So it's like a come. What is that?
Yes, it is. Nage is the site of an important military base in Japan.
Yeah, it's a military base. And then we have this this nest, this little town. It's like it's like a stop in time, and it's like nurturing life. And I've felt a lot this incredible care of for women, and I like this director because really empowers women.
Mm.
And at the beginning, the story is about this really beautiful woman that doesn't look like she has anything wrong, and her sister-in-law invite her, and we observe all the time her to understand what's wrong, why they were divorced, and
why they're divorced and why they're such good friends now. It's an intriguing conundrum. You think, because it's such an unusual situation.
Yeah, and it's also about the identity, because where is going Japan? Is it going like, he has other culture, countries, ethics that is imposed in the the country, or is like is finding their own identity? I love this pure moment with the two kids that decide to escape together, and it's really and then in the middle of the night their fathers go and get them.
Yes, I think he said also Fukada, he is a lot of he is influenced by the French director Eric Rohmer, and he has his films have his style, and exactly it's film based on dialogue, a lot of dialogue, and not many things happen, and this is in the same way of Fukada's style now. Even though I prefer his other films than this one, but I have just come from this film now, so it's just still I'm still thinking about it. Just now I finished.
Yeah, it's one of those films that does flower in your mind in a way. It's like one of those flowers that you drop into a glass of water and it unfolds.
Yeah.
And that's how a film like that is for me.
Yes.
And I haven't seen other movies so far. And Peter, do you have anything?
I've seen a number of movies. One in competition is, I don't know whether we can talk about it yet, is Fatherland.
Can't talk about it.
We haven't seen it yet. The other, the opening night film for Uncertain Regard is Teenage Sex and Death in Camp Miasma, which is an absolutely hilarious, bizarre, postmodern romp. I mean, I loved it. I've always liked Jane Schoenbrunn's films. I think they're very amusing, very strange, very distinctive, with this really bizarre knack of inventing pop cultural things that are imaginary and then persuading you that they're real, in a way. This one is about a fake 80s slasher genre, which went on for 10 films. And by the end of the movie, you almost believe that it is real, because it's treated with the same kind of superfan seriousness. And in a way, she has the aesthetic of a superfan, an immersive fan who plunges herself into the world of, as it were, this film, and persuades you to immerse yourself as well. And it's very bizarre. Gillian Anderson is very funny in it as the Norma Desmond-style actress who was in this slasher horror film and then retired and went to ground and nobody knows where she is. And she's like the sort of Norma Desmond of horror. And it's very funny.
Great. So thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have a chat with you.
Thank you.
And I hope to have you again back this year at our daily program.
Fred, 24/7 on Fred FM and smartphone app.